podcast listeners. Welcome back. This is Kevin Eva again, the editor-in-chief for The Journal, and I'm calling you from an absolutely glorious Vancouver morning and have the good fortune today of speaking with Catherine Bristow, who's a researcher in the palliative care department at King's College London and has kindly made herself available after regular working hours for the sake of recording a podcast with me. So thanks, Catherine, not only for doing this, but also for going above and beyond the call of duty and making yourself available after hours.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And clearly you've got our weather, I think, because it's glorious here as well.
Is that right?
So it's obviously coming your way.
It's been a long time coming our way, so we're glad to see it. As you know, but our listeners won't, the reason I wanted to chat with you is you have a paper coming out in the August issue of Medical Education entitled "Do Too Many Cooks Spoil the Broth? The Effect of Observers on Doctor-Patient Interaction." And I understand this has grown out of your PhD dissertation and your general background in social linguistics and interest in communication between teams and within teams and between patients and providers. And I just wonder if I can start by asking you what led you to think that this particular issue was a priority in some of the work that you've been doing.
Yeah, basically I did my undergraduate degree in English language and linguistics, so I've always had an interest in how we talk to people and how language is used and communication in general. But after my undergrad studies, I spent a bit of time working as a medical PA to a consultant, and I became very aware of the complexities of communicating with patients and their families in consultations, particularly around sensitive issues, for example, in cancer consultations. And I became acutely aware of what the patient has heard and what the doctor has said, and vice versa can often be quite skewed in terms of what each person recalls. At the same time as doing that, my husband was training to be a doctor, so I think I had medicine coming at me from all angles. And I decided to do a master's in linguistic studies, and I chose to study doctor-patient interaction in the outpatient setting for my study. And it threw up some interesting things around the way questions are used in consultations, the way patient questions are responded to, the way patients raise topics and how they're dealt with later on in the consultation. And so I chose to design another study for my PhD, funded by the Economic and Social Research Council. And it was during the design of the study that I chose to focus on a particular area, which was plastic surgery. And it just so happened that the consultations I was looking at were teaching consultations as part of a teaching clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So I had access straight away to consultations with multiple doctor and single patient focus. And there hadn't actually been a great deal of work done on this sort of consultation in the past, and it's becoming increasingly common due to changes in the way medical education is done now. Medical students get first-hand experience with patients much sooner. It used to be once they qualified, and now it seems to be within the first few weeks they're there getting their hands dirty. So it was something that I thought was really important and a really interesting area to look at.
Yeah, and it resonates in that there are any number of areas where you do see this disconnect between what people think they've said and what others hear, and I've heard a lot of concern about patients feeling like they were just treated as an object in the room, like a planter in the corner, while these sorts of teaching interactions were going on. Was there a specific anecdote or observation or something that led you to care specifically about the variable of how many health professionals or trainees were in the room?
I don't know whether there was a specific anecdote as such, but I was interested in the fact that quite often there's different types of people present in consultations, particularly in surgical teams. There can be consultations where there'll be a gaggle, or whatever the collective noun is for doctors, varying from consultant to training fellows to registrars to very new doctors, all within the consultation in a learning context. But then there can also be sometimes visiting medical students who seem to take quite a different role. So there wasn't particularly any anecdote. It was just something I was very interested in to see whether there were any differences in the way these different people, whether there was a difference in the way they affected the consultation.
Mm. Okay, and you adopted a discourse analytic method, went in and actually did some observations of these interactions, and you've quantified a number of things in terms of how the patients were responded to or not responded to, and the interactions between the other individuals. For those who haven't experienced this sort of procedure before, I wonder if you could elaborate a bit on how this actually works and how you're able to draw conclusions based on the language and the direction of conversation that's being presented.
Okay, yes. I mean, thinking sort of back a step, as sociolinguists, what we're interested in is how different aspects of society, whether that be your background, your culture, your gender, your working experience, how that can have effect on the way you communicate to people, but also vice versa, and how the way you communicate can have an effect on the situation that you're in. And in discourse analysis, what we're interested in is looking at language beyond the sentence. So not looking necessarily at just the little tiny bits of language. I mean, certainly in a lot of modern linguistics, you might be interested in the very small phonemes or morphemes, very small parts of words or sounds. But in discourse analysis, generally, you're interested in a larger sense. So looking beyond the sentence, looking at the meaning that's going on, looking at how different things are communicated. And I was specifically interested in certain features of language. So I was interested in questions were a big part of my focus. And questions are a very powerful linguistic device. They can control the topic because you can incorporate what it is exactly you want to talk about in a question. They control who's going to talk next. And they can also limit how much information you want from a question. For example, if I said to you, how are you doing? That's a very sort of open question compared to you. Are you well? Mm-hmm. When I'm limiting it a lot in terms of what I want from you in terms of a response. So I had a lot of focus on questions, looking at particularly when patients asked a question, was it answered? So quite a simple idea, really. But I was also interested in the topics that were raised. So if a patient raised a new topic, how was that dealt with within the consultation as a whole? And I also was interested in whether the doctors actually encouraged this questioning and raising of topics by asking the patients if they had anything that they wanted to ask. So a lot of my focus was really around how patients can raise their concerns and how that's responded to in consultation, and whether the presence of other people had an effect on the way that they were responded to.
Right. I've yet to hear a response that made me so self-conscious about the questions that I was asking. I hope that hit the right level for you. But the interactions themselves, I can imagine a lot of the tone would be set very quickly in that encounter, that even in the way that the patient is introduced to the team. Are you able to see very early on the effects, or these things that sort of grow as the consultation continues, where the team seems to just lose track of the fact that there's a patient in the room?
It's a difficult one, that. I think it varies in the sense that generally what would happen would be that the doctor would pick up the case notes and have a look through them. And they would either at that point call in the patient and start a consultation, or sometimes if the patient had a particularly interesting condition or just that they wanted to give the team more experience, they'd call the team in at that point. So sometimes the patient would be gathered up and taken into another room with a load more doctors after the consultation had already started, whereas on other occasions it would work differently. And so it was a difficult one to judge at the outset, mm-hmm. I must admit.
Okay, and the interactions that you're seeing, you mentioned the variable of the number of individuals. Do too many cooks spoil the broth? What other factors seem to have an influence on the rate of the types of questions and other variables that you were looking for?
Well, I think that's always a difficult thing to judge, because I think generally the research would suggest that female patients will ask more questions than male patients, and particularly in the presence of female doctors rather than male doctors. I think age can have an effect in the sense that older patients feel less, I want to put in inverted commas, allowed to ask questions in some circumstances than younger patients. I think younger patients have been more brought up with more patient autonomy and knowing more about the options and different things, and are perhaps more confident to ask questions. But it's difficult, because somebody that would, in one sense, be a prime question asker may have nothing that they want to ask, or their problem may have resolved. These were plastic surgery hand consultations. So they were people that might have a congenital problem with a hand or an injury or something like a carpal tunnel syndrome or something. So there was the potential for it to have resolved by the consultation, in which case they wouldn't have anything to ask. So what I was really interested in was looking at the corpus as a whole. So looking at all of those patients that were there, and looking at what happened to all of those questions as a whole, and trying not to focus on what the question was about, because from an outsider's perspective, I can't know how important that question is to that patient.
Right, right. So the analytic method didn't allow actually following up with the patient about the specific questions, and it was more an outside look at the interaction itself.
Yeah.
So if you were to be challenged to boil this paper down into its essence and tell somebody else what you think to be the key findings, what would you put forward?
Well, I would say that I noticed that the presence of additional medical personnel, whether they were professionals, so doctors, nurses, healthcare professionals, or whether they were additional students, did seem to be associated with changes in the way that different things were managed in the consultation. So when additional professionals were present, the consultations were longer. There were much more patient-initiated topics that were left unresolved. So at the end of the consultation, that topic hadn't been dealt with. Yeah. When there were students present, it was slightly different. The consultations weren't any longer, but there were fewer patient questions that were answered than in the control group. So what I tended to feel was that when additional professionals were present, there was an altered focus in the consultation. Mm-hmm. It incorporated teaching and assessment and learning. Whereas when the students alone were present, it seemed to be more of a distraction than an altered focus. So the focus seemed to remain as a therapeutic environment, but there was an element of distraction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And just having come away from a conversation about peer review of teaching and continuous quality improvement, both clinically and educationally, I wonder if this has implications for how those sorts of strategies might be implemented.
I think it does, absolutely. I mean, I think, as I mentioned previously, it's something that's becoming increasingly common for there to be a large medical presence in a consultation with additional doctors, students, nurses, and particularly in inpatient settings, which is another area I'd be very interested to look at. In, for example, a ward round scenario where the host of doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals move from bay to bay to bay. And I think it's something that's becoming increasingly common, but it doesn't really seem to be something that's addressed in communication training for students or for doctors. I mean, communication training has very much become a part of the core of medical training in recent years, but there doesn't seem to be specific training for senior doctors in terms of continuing professional development. There doesn't seem to be training available for them in how to manage these sorts of interactions. But I think before we get to that stage, we need much more research in this area.
Right. Actually, that's a perfect note to end on, given that this is part of your dissertation and part of a more general focus on communication. What is the next stage for you?
Well, from my PhD, I've moved on to a few different research projects, particularly looking at communication between teams and communication towards the end of life at the Cicely Saunders Institute, the Palliative Care Department in King's. And so I have a particular interest in team communication and end-of-life communication, but I continue to have an enduring interest in multiple professional interaction, and it's something that's very relevant to a palliative care setting where you may have medical or oncology specialists present as well. So it's something that I continue to have a strong interest in.
Yeah, and I would imagine that context also raises the other side of things, the role of additional individuals on the patient side as opposed to simply the professional side.
Absolutely. I'm a real strong advocate for taking somebody with you to any consultation. I think it doesn't matter what nature of the consultation, you won't recall everything that was said. And there's certainly been research in the past that suggested, particularly with cancer consultations, that the minute the C word is mentioned, everything else beyond that, patients don't recall.
Right.
So I think there's certainly a big role to be played for relatives and family and friends as well.
Right, right. Well, it's fascinating work, and congratulations both on some interesting data and interesting ideas, and also just getting the formality of your dissertation out of the way. I look forward to seeing how this continues to evolve.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yeah, my pleasure. Just as a reminder to the listeners, I've been speaking with Catherine Bristow, and we've been discussing her paper called Do Too Many Cooks Spoil the Broth? The Effect of Observers on Doctor-Patient Interaction, and it'll be released in just a couple of weeks from now in the August issue of Medical Education. I strongly recommend the paper to everyone, and we'll look forward to chatting again soon.
Great. Thank you very much for your time.